Okay, hello, Shashank. Today, this is a really exciting week. I can't believe it, like, how there's always so much news and stuff that happens, like, every single week, just in this, like, tiny little small niche of AI.
Well, I wouldn't say it's tiny and niche anymore, Mark. I think it was once a tiny niche, maybe 5 years ago. But it is the most important thing that everyone's working on right now.
You know, I think you're right. It's just like, it's mind-blowing to me. Like, how big, like, everything has just gotten. Like, just this week, like, you know, we get, like, some new models. Like, these new models are, like, beating GPT-4.
Finally.
Well, yeah, I mean, it took them a year or something, right? But, like, I'm excited for the competition. Like, it's cool. Like, I tried out Claude 3. So, Claude 3 is one of the new ones. Not a ton. I've only had access to it for, like, a day or so.
Oh, okay.
But I'm impressed. I am very impressed. Because, you know, I tried the Claude model. So, Claude is the Anthropic model. And, like, I tried it before. And, like, it was impressive because it had, like, a huge context window. But this new one seems to be, like, great at coding, actually. So I asked it some, like, programming questions, and I think it gave me, like, a better result than GPT-4 for a lot of the questions that I had. And I was quite impressed with that. Just like, you know, Gemini, I was using that, and I thought that beat GPT-4 for programming. But, like, I think Claude is kind of, in a certain sense, like, the best that I've seen so far with some programming stuff. Now, to be fair, I need to use a little bit more before I make, like, you know, more judgments. But so far, I'm very, very impressed with the Claude model. It's really cool that it's come out.
Yeah, that's really exciting. I mean, it's been, what, like, a year since GPT-4 came out, and the only improvement OpenAI has made on top of it is to make GPT-4 Turbo, which I think it's the same level of intelligence, but better performance, cheaper, and so it's like a fine-tuned version of not fine-tuned in, like, the training sense, but it's like an optimized version of GPT-4. And, you know, Gemini has what released about a month ago, and, you know, since then we've had Claude and what was the other one that we were talking about?
Mistral
yeah. Large.
So, yeah. All right. So, in case you guys are confused, so, like, we're talking about four models right now. We're talking about Claude, Gemini, Mistral, and GPT-4.
Four of the best models, all pretty comparable in terms of performance. They're hitting 80-something percent in most of the benchmarks, in, like, mathematical tasks, in question-answer tasks, and, like, I think 95-plus percent in general reasoning tasks, which is, like, really, really impressive.
So basically, they're all super good, and they're all, like, really competitive with each other. And what's really cool is they're all from, like, multiple different companies, right? So, like, GPT-4... is going to be from OpenAI, which is...
slash Microsoft.
Basically Microsoft at this point, right? We have Mistral, which is crazy.
It's its own thing.
It's like, it's like a 20-person company or something in France. It's super small.
Mm-hmm.
And they are punching way above their weight. So I am, like, ridiculously impressed. We've got the... What did we say? We were talking about Claude. So Claude is Anthropic.
And they're very cozy with Amazon, right?
And Google, too.
Are they?
Yeah, I think Google also invested some money in them as well, yeah. And then there was one more. What was the last one we were talking about?
Google.
Oh, yeah, Gemini, right, of course.
The OG AI company who's
been
working on this field for decades.
Yeah. It's wild. Like, I love the competition, and I think some people even argued that, like, GPT-4 was AGI. So, like, you know, AGI is basically, like, when the AI is kind of, like, as good at, like, you know, all tasks as, like, a human, just kind of, like, artificial general intelligence. It's just good at everything. It's hard to like exactly define. I've heard lots of like definitions, but like loosely, like AGI sort of means like the model is like kind of equal to or better than a human at basically all like knowledge based tasks is AGI. And I think that like we now have kind of like four models that maybe you could argue are at AGI. I think like, you know, exactly if we're there, it's gonna be hard to tell, but I'm impressed. And actually the Claude model, I saw that and actually Gemini as well, they both took IQ tests.
Oh.
And I think it was Claude, it got like 104 on the IQ test. So my understanding is that like 100 is
average,
yeah, right? So that means Claude is smarter than the average human.
Okay.
I mean, that's good, right?
I suppose that's good. But the problem I have with labeling these things as having AGI capability is that you can say they have that in a very narrow task, like taking an IQ test on pen and paper with a bunch of multiple choice questions and some yes, no answers. But once you expand the domain to like video, for example, which none of these models were able to do a few months ago, I think this like AGI concept quickly falls apart. And even just doing mathematical operations, I think they can only do like 1 plus 2 because they've probably seen 1 plus 2 in a sequence next to each other as plain text. But I don't think they can do any kind of mathematical reasoning in any sufficient capacity.
I mean, sure. But I'll tell you this. Like, one, like, I don't think I could do much more math in my head than, like, 1 plus 2. Like, anything more complicated, I need a calculator because I'm not that great at mental math. And two, I can't make a video at all. I need a camera. I need a tool to help me do that, right? So, like, you know, the fact that these models can like do some math and like generate a video and images and draw and like write poems, like it's better at basically anything that I can do.
I think it's way better on average than most, if not every single person on earth. Because like on average, the amount of things that it can do, the amount of things that it can remember and recite, it was like phenomenal. I don't think any one person is capable of all of that information, all of that skill. But on any one single domain, I think it's kind of subpar compared to like experts.
So you're saying that, okay, the AI is better on average mm-hmm. than most people, but like
maybe everyone,
the tippity top people, mm-hmm. The tippity top humans, mm-hmm. it's not as good at.
Yeah, and I think we need to maybe break down what we mean by, oh, is it good, better? Because I think it definitely has strengths that no human can match. Speed, memory, recall, all of those things. Oh, I mean, except for some hallucinations that are outside of its context window. But if it can maintain things in its context window, like the ridiculous 1 million context window Gemini Pro...
10 million
in research. In research, yeah, yeah. It can recall things flawlessly. I don't think any human is capable of that.
Yeah, that's right. And
maybe some outliers.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
With the memory palace method.
Yeah, but then like, I don't think you can do it that fast.
Mm.
So I guess like my point is like, Zhizhong, what would it take you to be convinced that like, okay, this model is like true AGI? Because like, I think like, you know, if it can beat the average person at most things, mm-hmm. I would consider that AGI. I mean, sure, like, you're going to have, like, you know, people who are extremely good at a particular task.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, if you're extremely good at a particular task, then, like, you know, you're the best in the world. Like, I mean, sure, I'll give that to you. Like, if the AI is better than the best in the world humans at, like, all tasks, then... And now we've reached artificial superintelligence.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think, like, AGI is necessarily, like, that high of a bar.
I guess my issue is that it's still limited by what domains it can operate in. I don't think it can do everything. It can only interact with you through a chat box and has some limitations in that domain, too.
So do you think that in order to be, like, true AGI, you would need a body to, like, interact with the world?
Interaction is one aspect, but, like, just... I meant, like... Maybe do mathematical operations. Maybe Oh, that's a good question. I might need to think about this and get back to you in the next podcast.
Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah, because I don't know. Like, I think that it's actually pretty decent at math, because I think that it was like GPT-4. It can do some math.
I guess it can always use tools.
Yeah, like it can use a calculator, right? Like,
which is what most humans would do anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, nobody's doing all these large partial differential equations or something like that in their head.
Okay, I guess if we use some of these models as orchestrators and let them call specialized tools, they're pretty damn close. They're pretty close. I would still trust a human if a person was the same cost. But they're not.
Well, she was much more expensive.
Oh, so expensive.
So, like, the fact that these models are so cheap, mm-hmm. that, like, you know, maybe they are actually better than, like, I mean, like, I would probably use the model over, like, hiring somebody.
So one thing I've been trying to do more in my personal life is use these models in agents to accomplish tasks with some checks and balances, with some chain of thought kind of prompting, to have them kind of like stretch their ability, to give them some reasoning skills, some validation, some double checking of their work, and then refining. And I think that's been pretty helpful. That really pushes their ability.
Yeah. What kind of tasks have you tried to automate?
Well, so for our meetup, I kind of wanted to get a list of all the members who attended, so we can tell our venue, Roger, who came, who didn't come. And that's kind of like a tedious task. I have to go to meetup, explore a list of members, filter by people who subscribe to a newsletter, and then pick those people who come to this event. So a lot of steps, a lot of CSV, Excel, finagling. And that's like a fantastic task to automate. I haven't got it working yet, but part of it is automated.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty cool. Yeah. I like that. Yeah. I mean, I could imagine that you could probably automate a lot of things like that. Yeah. And where you would have maybe had to hire like somebody to do that for you, like a secretary, mm-hmm. or like, I don't know, a virtual assistant. Now you could just go and have the AI do it, who's your like real virtual assistant.
Or you would have probably written some code to accomplish that automatically.
Yeah.
But now you just talk to it.
But like, not everybody can like write code.
Yeah. It's a big barrier to entry.
That's right. That's right. So, you know, Shashank, another thing, I don't want to like change the topic too much about like AGI, which I feel like we could talk about for another hour or two. But, you know, I was thinking, right? And there are all of these things, like all these models that are built, like in order to build them, they need to use some sort of like, you know, GPU or something, right? So like, I think we were talking before and we were looking at like Code Llama, and that was, you know, trained on like thousands of NVIDIA H100s, right? And then like,
yeah,
I think that, well, not everything is like clear, but I've heard reports that like GPT-4 was trained on some cluster with a bunch of I think it was like NVIDIA GPUs. And I think like maybe Gemini, I don't exactly know how that was trained. I don't think they published that, but maybe it was, mm-hmm. I assume it was trained on maybe like a bunch of TPUs. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, all of these models, it seems like, I would be willing to bet that most of them are using PyTorch. So like PyTorch is Facebook's library to build LLMs, and then on top of that is NVIDIA graphics cards, mm-hmm. which is like CUDA. But like the thing is like there's all these companies that are building on top of like NVIDIA. But the thing is like, you know, NVIDIA isn't the only player in town, right? Mm-hmm. Like AMD is working, mm-hmm. really hard at getting new support for training LLMs, right? I think that they saw the $1 trillion NVIDIA stock, and
yeah,
AMD, they want to, you know, get involved. And
I mean, they've been working on it for a while. And
yeah,
the thing I like about NVIDIA is that, AMD, I mean, NVIDIA is fantastic, but AMD, I think, is one of the few companies that does CPUs and GPUs really well. So they really understand this concept of specialized accelerated computing, and they're just trying to build chips to optimize a specific task. And I think they can really put out something like the Grok. So there was another company that I think we talked about in last week's podcast. They're working on an LPU, which is an accelerated computing chip, which is focused just on inference. So similar to NVIDIA GPUs, which do a fantastic job at parallelized computing, which is great for training and inference, for building the model and responding to your requests. This LPU from Grok is just focused on just responding, just generating tokens in a parallelized way really, really well. And I think like AMD has the ability to do that really well too.
Yeah. So there's like NVIDIA, there's AMD.
Intel is trying to catch
up. Yeah, there's...
Google makes its own TPU designs.
I think Intel, they have their own fabs and they make their own chips, I think.
I think you might be right.
They do. And then there's Cerebras, which makes like super expensive chips for
wafer scale.
Yeah. For training LLMs. But I was trying to think about like, you know, what's the common denominator of all these things, right? And I think that like one of the big common denominators is...
I think there's two.
I agree. Yeah. But I think one of the big ones is TSMC, the Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Corporation. Yeah. So for those who don't know, TSMC is a company in Taiwan, which, you know, is having some political risk with China right now.
For a long time.
But, you know, that's been ongoing. But they basically make, like, all the chips, like, everything. I mean, I'm sure there's, like, exceptions. I think Intel might not make it, but like...
They make chips for NVIDIA, AMD, Google, probably Cerebras.
Yeah.
Also Apple. I think most of the iPhone's chips are fabricated by TSMC.
Yeah. So it's just like, it's crazy to me that like this little island in the Pacific Ocean, right, is just like pumping out all of... like the chips, like basically it on Earth.
Oof, insanity.
Like it's crazy, right? Like
I do think they were thinking about opening up a chip manufacturing place, fabrication place in the U.S. to de-risk all this geopolitical tension.
I mean, I think they should. I mean, yeah. I like only have it made in Taiwan. I mean, like that risk. Seems just like really risky for it all to be like in one place. I mean, like
great for the country.
Well, sure, but, like, what if there's, like, I don't know, like, a hurricane or, like, a tsunami? It's just, like...
Are they in the seasonal hurricane path?
I'm not sure. Like, tsunami, hurricane, natural disaster, a flood, landslide. I don't know. Like, all these things could just, like, go and, like, wipe out the entire world's, like, chip production.
I do think people are more concerned about the geopolitical tension with China being right there. But I think given how pivotal of a role that they play in this entire ecosystem, that is like one of the strongest defenses that a country could have. To be the most important player in this entire AI race.
Yeah. Yeah, because like everybody, like, I don't know. Like, I just don't understand. Like, if NVIDIA, who use it, like, just designs the chips, they don't even make them. Like, if they're worth $1 trillion, like, why isn't TSMC, who actually, like, makes the chips for, like, you know, NVIDIA, and then, like, Apple, and then, like, Google, and AMD, like, why aren't they worth at least $1 trillion? Like, I don't get it. Like, I don't actually know how much they're worth, but, like, I feel like it should be more.
They're worth a third of a billion.
It's only a third of a billion. It's only...
The third of a trillion, sorry. Oh. It's $362 billion.
Oh, I thought it was like 300 million.
Whoa, wait, hold on. It's 362 billion TWD.
Oh.
And
GWD, how much?
Yeah.
What does that mean as D?
Ooh. Let me check. 11 billion.
It's only worth $11 billion?
That seems off.
Well,
hold on. Sorry, listeners. I take that back. That is the yearly revenue.
Oh.
Market cap. Google does not tell me that.
With a rep, maybe they have really low margins.
Okay. Market cap is $632 billion, I assume, USD.
Oh, $632 billion.
Okay, that seems more reasonable.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, that seems like a lot. Well, it's still a lot of money. Because, you know, they still have to, like, make all the chips, whereas, like, I guess, like, maybe NVIDIA is, like, more profit, I assume. No, I haven't actually looked at the financial sheet, but...
Yeah, I wonder what the margins on designing a chip versus fabricating it versus the other major player in this game. I was thinking of ASML.
ASML.
The company that builds the machines that makes the machines to make the chips.
Right. They do lithography or something, right?
Advanced semiconductor machine lithography, I believe.
Yeah, because I really don't understand how any of this works, honestly. It seems like it's way over my head.
I think that makes sense, which is why they're worth close to trillions of dollars.
Oh, are they? Are they worth that much?
I just meant these companies in general.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Let me see. ASML.
Yeah, so my understanding is that ASML, like, I guess when you have a semiconductor, so, like, a semiconductor is typically built with silicone. So silicone is interesting because it has a property of being both a conductor and an insulator.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be at the same time depending on how it's treated.
Mm-hmm.
So, like,
based on the charge that you're running through it.
Right, exactly. So basically what that means is, like, if you think of a traditional circuit board, right, like, or not even like a circuit board, but just like a wire, right, like, if you think about, like, a traditional wire, like, electrons are just, like, running through the wire, like, you know, if you think of like a telephone pole, right, like, you just got, like, electrical charge, like, running through that. If you think about, like, your iPhone charger, right, like, you know, like, electricity is just, like, flowing through. But, like, with these semiconductors, like, you don't actually need, like, a physical wire, but my understanding is you can just, like, essentially draw the wires onto, like, the chip itself. So, like, I guess what they do is they take, like, a big block of silicone. And then they basically use these things made by ASML, mm-hmm, to, like, cut the shape of really, really tiny wires on top of the silicone. And then, and I think that's, like, what lithography is. It's just, like, mm-hmm, little tiny wires onto, like, a big chip or, like, a big hunk of silicone.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, it works because, like, the part that you cut, treated one way, it acts as like a wire, yeah, and then everywhere you didn't touch is an insulator. So it's like the rubber around your charger. It just, like, kind of will make it so that, like, the electrons can just, like, run on, like, the place that you cut, and everywhere else that you didn't cut is just not a wire, I guess. And I think that's, like, how the semiconductor works. And my understanding is that, like, with the ASML,
mm-hmm,
I'm sure there's lots of nuance here that I'm, like, leaving out, but, like, at a high level, like, they are the ones who, like, are helping to, like, actually cut, like, the patterns into the block of silicone.
Mm-hmm. They make the machines that do that and then sell these machines for, I think, like, a couple hundreds of millions of dollars to a handful of companies.
Who's buying these things? I mean, I would think it's only TSMC.
NVIDIA.
Oh, NVIDIA buys them? Because I would think that, like, they would sell it to TSMC.
Oh, actually, you're right.
And then, like, NVIDIA would just, like, give them the design.
Sorry, Intel, I guess.
Yeah. You know, another thing I wonder is, like, why doesn't TSMC just, like, make their own chips? Like, TSMC-branded chips? I feel like they could.
I mean, I assume NVIDIA has a lot of IP that is worth a lot of money, which is why AMD can't catch up to NVIDIA. Not to mention the entire ecosystem they've built with CUDA.
Right. What is CUDA? Can you explain that?
I actually don't know what it stands for, but it's, from my understanding, it's software that helps you run machine learning workloads and use the GPUs to accelerate different functions. So if you're doing a bunch of operations, which are mostly matrix multiplications, you can run those multiplications on the GPUs and leverage this parallel processing to do a bunch of mathematical operations really quickly, as opposed to if you just run a bunch of code on your laptop, it's going to use the CPU by default and not make efficient use of all these parallel processing units in the GPU.
I see. Interesting. Yeah, I mean, okay.
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of layers for this entire stack. So we talked about ASML, which builds these machines to etch pathways onto a chip. And this company is like trying to push the boundaries of Moore's Law, I think. And every year, they're maybe through advanced material science, just hardcore engineering, build machines that are able to etch circuits or etch pathways on a chip that are smaller and smaller. So you're able to pack more logic onto each chip, make it do more work using less energy and save you more money. And on top of that, you have TSMC, which is fabricating these chips. I assume there's some improvements every year that they keep making, although I don't understand that part of the stack that much. Then you have the design companies. And I think this starts extending beyond Moore's Law, because it's not just the semiconductors at this point. Here, the architecture of like the circuit diagram that you're using for your chip matters a lot. You can specialize the architecture for each kind of task that you're using. So like video processing might benefit from a completely different architecture than, say, like even gaming, even though they're both leveraging parallel processing. And then on like way at the top, you have these LLMs that have their own architecture and their own improvements. So I think it's every layer of the stack is pushing the boundaries in like a different vertical to try to make computing and like the end experience, end result, the experience for the end user much better.
Okay, so let me try to sum this up. I think I got it. So what you're saying is, if you start from the bottom, mm-hmm. right? First, there's ASML, mm-hmm. which makes the machines to make the machines.
Actually, make the machines to make the chips.
Okay, so ASML then make the machines to help make the chips. So in a certain sense, they make the machines to help make the machines. TSMC, they make the machines, like they make the chips, they make the GPUs, all that stuff. Then on top of that, like companies like NVIDIA and Intel and AMD, they just like tell TSMC what to do and then like how to build what they want.
To give them a drawing.
Right? They're just like, Ed. It's like, hey, build it. It's just like a little sketch. Like, ah, more power. Just like a little guy with like a big, like a muscular figure. It's like, ah,
faster, stronger. Bigger, better, faster, cheaper.
Yeah.
Smaller. Yeah. Actually, smaller, not bigger.
Well,
smaller and bigger at the same time.
Yeah. Just better. Just make it better, right? So, all right. So, we got TSMC, or we got ASML, which makes the machines that make the machines. We got TSMC, which like makes the machines. We got Apple, NVIDIA, AMD, all these companies telling Google TSMC what to do. Mm-hmm. And then we just got a few companies building software mm-hmm. on top of all of these, you know, chips that were made ultimately by TSMC. And then like, you know, there we've got like, you know, all our big companies. We've got Google, we've got OpenAI, we've got Facebook or Meta, we've got Amazon, we've got all these massive companies building stuff on top of what was originally made by TSMC, you know, hence like also ASML. And then like that's the base model, that's like, you know, your Llama 2, that's your Mistral, that's your Gemini, that's your GPT-4, that's all your stuff, right? And then on top of that, we have just regular people either using them directly or building stuff on top of that. And that's like the whole world of AI, I think, in a nutshell, basically.
And I think the part, from my perspective, that is having the most innovation is the very few layers at the top. where obviously you have the software, which is these LLMs, which are radically different from what we had like several years ago. And the chip architecture, which is trying to accommodate for this new kind of computing. I feel like it's this phenomenon of LLM is like slowly rippling outwards, and it's going to touch TSMC and ASML if it hasn't already. I mean, I'm sure their engineers are working on it already,
sure,
as
aware.
We say.
I'm sure, they're like, what's this LLM thing?
Yeah. But, you know, I can imagine that there's different kinds of manufacturing and things that would optimize for these different architectures, maybe.
Yeah, I assume so. And isn't that kind of what, like, Cerebras is doing, I think?
Yeah, so they're on the level of NVIDIA, as in they're on the same layer of the stack.
Right.
Designing the chips, and the cool things that they're doing is obviously making it bigger. Not one tiny little chip that's...
it's the biggest possible chip you can make on a single block of silicon.
Yeah, so it, like usually a CPU chip is the size of like maybe one or two keys on your keyboard. But this thing...
it's the size of your keyboard. Actually, I'm bigger.
Yeah, I think it's bigger than your whole laptop.
Wow.
And I thought it was like a round wafer. But they chopped the edges to make it a really... the biggest square that you can fit in that round wafer.
So, like, for those that don't know, like, when you make these CPUs, like, typically what happens is you start with, like, a giant, like, block of silicone. It kind of looks like a tree log. Sort
yeah,
of.
I thought it's like a spool.
Well,
I remember going to the Intel Museum, and that's the visual that I have in my head.
Well, I don't know. It's like a big cylinder,
like a tree trunk.
Like a tree trunk. Yeah. Yeah, it's like a tree trunk.
Yeah.
And then, like, I guess you'd like
we're slicing it.
You slice it like potato chips.
Yep.
Like, just imagine like a giant potato.
Yep.
And then like you just kind of slice it like a potato chip,
yep.
Right? And then, like, each one of these potato chips, mm-hmm. or computer chips... mm-hmm.
We're dicing it.
We're dicing it, yeah.
Traditionally, the traditional chips.
Right, exactly. Like you know, bag of Lay's or something, like Ruffles.
Sure.
You know, a potato chip. But, like, an actual, like, potato chip. And then you chop it up, like, dice it, like, dice long it. Ways. And then you have just, like, a thin but, like, wide thing that you're going to be using, right? So, like... that is a standardized size. So I guess it's, what is it, like 12 inches in diameter, I think?
Sounds about right.
Something like that. Or maybe a little bit bigger. I don't know.
Bigger, I think.
Bigger than 12 inches? Yeah. I don't know. It's like it's like a tree trunk, but like a mid-sized tree, mm-hmm. not like super big. So then you got this like little like flat piece of silicone. And then what they're going to do is like TSMC and ASML and, you know, all these companies will just kind of like draw out like the CPU that they want. And then on this, they might have 50 or 100 CPUs or GPUs or whatever thing they're making, just starting with this like block of silicone. And then they're just going to cut it out. And then you're going to get like a regular CPU. But when Cerebras said, they say, hey,
just
we don't want to cut it out.
No.
Let's just use the whole thing. So it's like, I guess you can't make anything possibly bigger unless you got like a bigger piece of silicone. And I actually, I think that's probably why it's called Silicon Valley, because, you know, there's a lot of companies doing this kind of thing.
That's absolutely why.
Yeah.
Fun fact, the company that I work at Google in Mountain View, and the headquarters is built or is located and in Mountain View, and the building that is currently the headquarters where Sundar sits used to be the former office of Silicon Graphics, which is one of the OG silicon companies here,
wow.
in Silicon Valley.
That's cool. And Sundar, that's
the CEO of Google. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And I think, you know, the last few decades of computing really determined what kind of chips were being built. Like, you know, there were the big behemoths, Microsoft, Apple, building some of the biggest pieces of software, like Microsoft Operating System, Office, and, you know, the Mac OS, and now Facebook, which is like probably massive, not to mention Google, all these code bases running computation, massive, massive amounts of code bases, doing a lot of computation. And that's really what the CPU was built for. Now, these freaking LLM, even more massive. And the amount of computation that they do is like a ridiculous scale, way more than what traditional computing is used to. So I think the hardware that is powering these kinds of computation is changing dramatically too. So it's exciting.
Yeah, just everything is getting better. You know, like I've heard it, like the reason why we have exponential growth is because we're using all the current technology that we have now to build the next technology. So it's like, you know, we're going to continue to like exponentially grow just like and improve in society because like everything is all improving all at once. And like, well, the best peak technology that we have right now is being used to build the next stuff that's being built. And then the stuff that we're going to build next time is going to be like so much better than what we're using now. And it's just like that cycle just continues. And then you get exponential growth. And then we're going to eventually by 2045 probably hit the
singularity. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, well, whatever that
is. Super intelligence, something.
Yeah. It's going to be great. And I'm ready. I'm so excited for that future.
That is an exciting future to look forward to.
Yeah. So anyways, Chuck, I think we're out of time.
We can leave you on that note.
Yeah. So, all right. Until next time.
Bye, everybody.